Hey, it's Dave Weiner here. This is not Daily Source Code. This is Morning Coffee Notes. It's September 11th, 2004. Boy, someday we'll have a September 11th and people will just sort of remind you that, hey, remember this was a big day once. I think we're getting there. I think this September 11th, it's very hard to get the body chemistry reacting quite the same way. I mean, I remember how it felt to have, you know, the certainty that one American city or more than one American city was going to get nuked. I remember saying to a friend that I was absolutely sure that was going to happen, and well, today maybe at some level I still am sort of sure. But it's not an emotion. It's a thought now, and there's a very big difference between the surety that comes with emotion and then one that comes with logic. It doesn't feel as strong. It certainly doesn't feel like we're in any great danger. I've resumed normal life as much as life can be normal. I think most people have. Well, it's not politically correct to say that we have moved on, so be it. I think we have moved on. So that's sort of one thought for September 11th, 2004. I'm here in Seattle. They tell me that the rainy season has not started, but you could fool me. Last night it was just a stunning storm. I left a dinner party that I was at and made a right turn instead of a left turn. I couldn't make a left turn on Highway 99, which is, I've gotten caught on that highway before. You can just go for miles and miles and miles and never get an opportunity to make a left turn. And I swear I don't know how to do that. And the last time I got lost there, well, it was good weather. Last night it was terrible weather. And so I just kept driving and driving and driving until finally I saw a lot of cars, I won't say most of the cars, but a lot of the cars were exiting on the right, making a right turn. And so I just decided, you know, I'm not going to keep going. I know I'm going in the wrong direction. And actually, I think I probably wasn't going in the wrong direction, but anyway, as it turns out, I made the right turn, went up the hill, up the hill, up the hill, left, right, going, oh my God, I'm getting more and more lost, but I have absolutely no idea where I am, and the rain is coming down, and people are honking me. I don't know how to drive in Seattle. I mean, every city, it seems, every reasonable-sized city has its own sort of logic to how you're supposed to drive, and there's Boston rules and New York rules, and I'm good at New York, very good. That's where I learned how to drive, and I got good at Boston, I can even drive in New Orleans, where people are practically suicidal. things they do there, you wouldn't believe. But Seattle has its own logic, and I don't know it yet. So I went around and up and up and up, and then I came to a familiar place. I came to Queen Anne Hill, and I've been there before, and I know how to get to Interstate 5 from Queen Anne Hill. You go up the hill, and then you go down the hill, and you make the first big left you can make, and I don't know what the name of the street is, and that takes you right by Seattle Center. And as you're coming past it, there are two beautiful signs that say I-5 South and I-5 North. And hold on one sec. Sorry, someone was at the door. I didn't want to record that, and it didn't turn out to be anything important, but who knew? Anyway, so I found I-5 North, and I said, okay, I know, even though I don't have any chance of getting my eyes onto a map because it's dark and it's pouring rain, and but I remember when I came into Seattle, I-5, and I'm staying on the east side, I-5 to 405, and I know that 5 intersects with 405 if I go 5 north, because that's how I came into town. And so I kept driving. One of the first intersections was 520. And I knew that 520 would get me there too. But I decided not to go via 520 because I knew that that was going to be a long way around, and I thought that getting to 405 would be the most direct. So I just went past 520, and I just drove and drove and drove, and the rain got worse, and the traffic was terrible, but it was moving really fast. And then it rained, picked up even more, and my car started hydroplaning. You know, if you've never had that feeling where you, like, it doesn't feel like your tires are gripping the pavement, it was a mind blower. And yet everybody else seemed to be handling this okay. But I did see cars pulled over, so I know that it wasn't just me that was sort of having trouble, you know, coming to grips with this weather. But I kept going, and I kept going, I kept going, and it was mile after mile, exit after exit. And the signs now weren't about Seattle. They weren't about towns that I had ever even heard of. And I was starting to question whether or not I actually had remembered correctly where 405 was relative to 5. And so I had started to formulate a plan that if in 3 exits I didn't see any evidence of 405, that that I would get out and I would stop and I would take 5 deep breaths and I would look at the map and I would figure out what to do. And even getting out didn't off the highway didn't seem like it would be all that easy to do. So, but then, as luck would have it, the next exit was 405, 2 miles, and those were the longest 2 miles I ever drove. And I got off and I'm crawling at 25 miles an hour and I've got all these people lined up behind me getting off the exit, and oh boy. And so then I get onto the freeway and they all start passing me, and I'm in this middle of this cloud of rain, and I said, if I ever get off this and get out of this alive, well, I'll make a long story short, I did make it back to the hotel in one piece, and no damage to the car, no damage to me, but as I said on Scripting News Today, it kicked my ass. I guess it's good to have your ass kicked. It's good to have your ass kicked as long as you survive the ass kicking. You know, it felt like touch and go there. I want to comment on the whole situation with the presidential election for 2004. I really think that as people were saying during the Democratic primaries, that this is the most important election we voted in recent memory. I think that we're clearly looking at a failed presidency with the Bush administration. I can't think of anything that this government has done that has worked, which isn't necessarily unusual. I mean, a lot of times, you know, you get governments that don't work, and it isn't the end of the world. It's just sort of things don't move, and you know, maybe that's not the worst thing. But now, we're fighting a war. I mean, had he not started the war in Iraq, things would have been very different. Not sure that we would be spending that money on domestic things, but we wouldn't be, as Kerry sort of suggests, that the $200 billion, which I think is an underestimate, that we're spending on Iraq, that could have been spent for other purposes. But it's kind of, you know, a little weird to say that because, you know, hey, what were the chances that we were actually going to spend that money on other things? But, you know, the joke is on us. And it's not, you know, they say that it's going to, that this debt is going to end up being passed on to the next generation and the generation after that. That's salesmanship. That's sort of faux compassion. And it's not true. But the deficit is going to be paid for by you and me. And it's going to be paid for probably sooner than any of us think. At some point, there's nothing wrong with debt. Debt is what this, you know, our whole economy is based on financing on, you know, investment with debt. And if the investment is productive and produces new jobs and produces profits, then debt is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it. So if you use debt to build schools and you have, and as a result, a more educated populace, which is more competitive on a world basis, and, you know, people earn higher salaries compared to people in other economies, and therefore your tax base is bigger, and you have more money to pay back the debt. So that works. However, when you borrow money to go fight a war in a place that, you know, doesn't result in new infrastructure for your country, doesn't result in raising the education level of the populace, doesn't in any way enhance the financial health of the organization, in this case the United States, that's doing the borrowing, and if it's any sizable amount of money, then you've got a problem coming up. And there's no question that we're not generating any wealth with that investment. The news that isn't being focused on. You have to watch the news with your own eye. You have to go seek it out, because they're scared to tell you what's going on in, or they're scared to put it in your face, what's going on in Iraq. But what's going on is that gradually, city by city, the Americans with our Iraqi clients are losing control of every city. And you can easily extrapolate to where this is going. It's we're staffing enclaves. We're not keeping the peace in a country. And I can't tell you what to do. And so when the people sort of disingenuously say, well, where's Kerry's plan? Well, you know, Bush creates an impossible situation, and then thinks that he can argue that his opponent, because he doesn't have a plan, is incompetent to be president. Well, let's get real. I mean, basically, we're not going to look to Bush to admit that he was wrong. Bush doesn't do that, and nor should we expect him to do that. However, we don't have to have that stake. You know, I understand now why they went into Iraq. I do. I mean, John McCain explained it in his speech at the Republican convention, and you just had to listen to him and take him at face value and listen to how he explained it. And it all fit together. And what they wanted to do was they wanted to tell the Arab world that you can't push around the United States, that we're going to show you what our military power is capable of doing in your neck of the woods. And number one. Number two is, it's understandable that they couldn't explain it to us that way, because that would, how would that have gone over? I mean, you know, they're not going to explain that to the average American citizen, that they use war as a demonstration to the politicians of the Middle East and to the terrorists that the United States is not chicken shit, you know. Here we are, we're tough, you know, on the terms that they understand. You know, we were criticizing Bush because he was sort of being like John Wayne. Well, you know, Osama bin Laden kind of thinks like John Wayne. So, you know, okay. I wish they'd explained it to me. I kind of wish I had been able to figure that out. Wasn't able to, but when John McCain gave his speech, all of a sudden the light bulb went on and I understood. I don't think it's a good reason to go to war. And I'm frankly, having listened to McCain in other contexts, I think he agrees that the problem with going to war for that purpose is that war is a very messy, unpredictable, dirty thing. And so when you go to war, it isn't clean. It isn't, you end up with things like the Abu Ghraib prison, or you end up creating terrorists. It's naive beyond belief to think that a couple hundred thousand American troops could control a country the size of Iraq. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. All one would have to do is to try to imagine, you know, flipping it around and thinking, you know, that an equivalent number of Iraqi troops were to come to the United States, to think, well, how would they control us? How would they, you know, keep us from throwing them out? We were reducing them to occupying enclaves. Well, the sad news is that we didn't prove anything to the leaders of the Middle East. We proved to them exactly how vulnerable we are, and we did the terrorists the biggest favor in the world. We moved the U.S. military into a place where it's very easy for them to attack them. You know, it's a lot easier for them to hit the American military when they're on Iraqi soil than when they are on American soil or on West German soil, or sorry, German soil, or Korean soil. You know, move them to the Middle East and all of a sudden you're going to get suicide bombers going after American boys and girls. Perfectly predictable, obvious on its face. They probably told him, and he probably dismissed it. I read the Richard Clark book. I think everybody who votes should read it and consider, you know, all they said about the Richard Clark book was they went after his character. They said he's a flawed human being, you know. That's how they answer every challenge to them, is they go after, this is the, you know, this is the way dysfunctional families work, and they're sort of taking advantage of the fact that most people don't think carefully about when they're being lied to, you know, because don't change the subject, answer the question, you know, how much planning did you do, and how many of the options did you consider, and what was the probability that it would end up like this, and did you believe them when they told you that, and, You know, Bush likes to say, and Cheney has come out straight out and said that, you know, we'd be very, it would be very dangerous for us to have Kerry in the White House if there was another terrorist threat. You know, I did my homework on this, and I think Bush would be a terrible person to have in the White House based on our experience with him. I mean, him and Condoleezza Rice, whose job it was to be looking at all the different angles, you know, on what could possibly go wrong here. They let us down. This was all discoverable, and, you know, Rice's explanation that nobody could have foreseen it was a lie. I mean, it was foreseen. They got documents on it. They were warned that this was what they were planning on doing. So, you know, they lie, and they... And then they do the character assassination thing. I mean, Richard Clark, you know, may be a flawed human being, you know, I guess we all are, but that they haven't addressed what he said. They haven't said what he said is wrong. And, you know, you have to listen to that carefully, because these are really skilled politicians at this, at getting elected, but they're not skilled at running things. So I think this is a milestone election for us in the United States. I think that if we go... I'm going to take Dick Cheney's attitude and flip it around. That if we, as a country, given everything we know about Bush and the way they've run the country for the last 4 years, if we go ahead and reelect him, we deserve whatever we get. We were warned. We had ample notice. We had ample notice that these people don't consider... they're not smart people. They don't operate in us in a smart way. You know, he's a slogan leader. He likes these little things that go on bumper stickers. And, you know, if we don't rise above that, we deserve what we get. And I'd love to hear the counterbalancing argument why Bush should be trusted with 4 more years without any character assassination. I would love to hear an audio blog post from somebody, a thoughtful blog post, that doesn't resort to saying that this is a bad person, or, you know, he threw away his medals when he was a young man, or any of that crap, because I see right through it, you know. I'd like to hear a rational argument why I should vote for George Bush for president in 2004. And I promise that I will listen to it, and I'll carefully consider it. I haven't heard it yet. All I've heard so far is appeals, ad hominem attacks, and appeals to extremely immature emotions. And I think this is an important enough decision It requires some deliberation, requires thought, requires information, and then judgment. And so I invite people who are supporting the president for re-election to come back and explain, never mind the fact that whether or not he dodged the draft. I've said this publicly. I don't care if he dodged the draft. Everybody was doing it then. I was alive. I was 1 year. Had I been born 1 year earlier, I would have been drafted. I had a low draft number. I was born on May 2nd. Had a low lottery number. Didn't have good school grades. I wasn't supporting a family. I matched all the criteria. I would have had to have made the same kind of decision that George Bush and his family had to make about whether or not that he should go serve in Vietnam. And I don't know that if given the chance, I would have done it any differently from the way he did it. So I certainly can't blame him for doing what he did. And they could clear up that whole issue by just saying that. And I think that a lot of people would say, thanks very much. Now we can move on. You know, it's true. Basically, if you were there, you know that this was a war that wasn't supported broadly by the American people. There were some people who believed that it was a just war, that it was a good thing to be doing. But as time went by, fewer and fewer people believed that. And eventually, there was absolutely no support for the war. And turns out that's pretty important. A country that's at war has to support the war, and if it doesn't support it, it isn't going to work. So anyway, that's Morning Coffee Notes. It's September 11th, 2004. We're just a few weeks away from the presidential election, and I'm trying to do my part to help make the decision that we make, to do what I can to help make the decision we make a good one, whatever way it turns out. So anyway, you can catch if you want to subscribe to the RSS 2.0 version feed of this program, I guess it is, of Morning Coffee Notes. The URL is www.scripting.com/rss.xml. This is Dave Weiner, Dave@scripting.com, and I'll see you again real soon. Take care. Bye.